welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name's Andy, as always. Thanks for tuning in. There's been a little bit of a gap with some of the episodes to date. I'm not sure if you guys have noticed. I've tried to keep it fairly consistent, but I've gone from the couple a week, or I think at one stage I was almost on three in a week or whatever it was, down to one a week again. Yeah, things are a bit crazy at the moment. I'm in the process of finalizing all of the last little niggly things that are outstanding for our wedding, which is coming up at the end of August. So it's getting closer and closer. So it's exciting, but extremely stressful as well. So there's been a lot of things going on, stuff with the band as well. So we're still in the process of getting everything finalized for the US and going through the visa process, which is, yeah, there's a little bit of stress behind it, but it will all work out. So it's fine. So I've slowed down a little bit with the podcast, but I'm trying to keep it fairly consistent. Also, while I don't think I've had an opportunity to really sort of make a comment about the podcast party that happened a few weeks ago in Sydney. So a massive thank you to everyone that came out. It was really cool, totally chilled out, informal sort of do that we had, where we just sort of hung out at the bar and drank and just dribbled and just talk shit for a few hours, and it was really cool. And so a massive thanks to Jordan at Frankie's Pizza for being so hospitable with the venue, and thanks to everyone that came out. It was really, really cool. And I'm going to do a few more of these. I'm going to try and do more of these just long term. So I think probably I'll look to do another one later this year, depending on how everything falls. And I'm looking to do a few things interstate as well in other parts of Australia. So there's a few other things that I've got lined up probably over the next 12 months. So we'll see how that looks. And then maybe we can find some opportunities to extend this further. So it's not just the Sydney guys that we have a social do for. Anyway, it's really massive thanks to everyone who came out. That was really, really cool. And there'll be more coming soon in the future as well. Anyway, moving on, the guest for this week is Jake Skinner. So Jake, I've known for quite a few years. Met him when our bands first played together in Christchurch, going back 7 or 8 years. And Jake's band at the time, Disillusion, which is still around but currently on hiatus, is a really cool band. I'll put some links to the music as well, so you guys can check it out. But Jake's had an interesting path over the last few years, and he goes into detail in our conversation, but a lot of it sort of changed he's changed his mental approach and his outlook on life, and he's got heavily into physical fitness. He's become a personal trainer and also discovered flotation. And you guys, for anybody who's been listening to the podcast over however many months this has been going, will probably know that I've got a keen interest in it. But I've yet to dive into it. So it's something that I really need to pull my finger out and step into it and give it a go. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to tick that off the list in the coming weeks and maybe just do a follow-up episode on that, because I think for you guys who probably aren't terribly aware of flotation and float tanks, it probably sounds very, and I've mentioned this in the conversation with Jake, on the surface sounds very simple and probably non-eventful and probably something that doesn't have a lot of benefit. But as you'll hear, there's so many facets to this that can be so beneficial for the mind and body. And I think for me, where I'm at in my life, I think it's probably something that I really need to experience and need to see whether it's something that I should really take advantage of. So we'll see where the future holds. But Jake spent a year in Canada, and several of those months in that year are working at a flotation center. So he's had a lot of experience with floating. And we talk about his experiences that he's had personally, and also some of the stories from other people that have had benefits from using flotation. And we talk about fitness, just physical fitness and mental fitness, the body and mind being linked up together, and the benefits of doing the right thing by yourself, whether that be, physical movement and, exercise, mental approach and your diet as well. We speak a little bit about diet also. A really cool episode. I'll put all links up for Jake for his blog. He's also got a blog, his band, and contact details so you can reach out and have a chat to him. But he's a really cool guy, very inspiring because he is somebody that has changed significantly over the last few years and is a great example of somebody who's just doing fantastic things. And we need more people like this out there. So I really encourage you to reach out and just say a quick hello to him and let him know what you thought of the conversation. So anyway, enough rambling because I am very good at that. Please enjoy this conversation with Jake. I think the big thing I was going to ask straight off the bat is, you're currently a personal trainer?
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing that for?
I've been doing that for about, how long have I been doing that for? At least a bit, about 3 years now, actually.
And there's been a bit of a journey over the last 3 years, which we'll no doubt have a chat about as we go. But I'm curious as to, because when I first met you, and this is going back a few years now, I certainly didn't envision you to be a personal trainer and be heavily into the whole fitness world and all the other things that you've been doing over the last few years. So what was the change? Was there something that happened that sort of got you into this, the industry itself, but even just for yourself personally?
Well, essentially what got me into it was really my health. My health was really going downhill. I was in the hospitality industry at the time. So I worked full time as a chef. And there's obviously a lot of hospitality parties and plenty of free alcohol. So it's always fun, right? And that's everyone's dream. But essentially my health started going downhill and I started noticing it quite badly. So I think my girlfriend at the time was going to this little small gym in town and I decided to tag along for one of the workouts. And essentially, I just got on the rower and absolutely smashed myself. and I felt the endorphin rush that I think a lot of people feel when they first do it. And then that's where the journey really started, man. Like, I really got into it and really started connecting the mind and body a lot more. And it helped with my creativity with writing and everything as well. So it was super cool.
What, I mean, I've attempted to go to the gym multiple times and sometimes I've stayed longer than other stints in the past, but I mean, was it really that instant that you really sort of it just something clicked straight away, or was it something that you really had to push yourself initially just at least a few visits or a few goes or over a period of weeks until it really started to bed in? Or was it really something that was a bit of an epiphany at the time where you went, this is what I need to do, and or you were in that much of a position where you felt like you had no choice, you just had to make that change?
Well, essentially, it was an epiphany. Yeah. So it wasn't like I was forced to make a change or anything like that. There was no real catalyst as such, but apart from feeling ill and drowsy and shitty all the time, right? So there was an epiphany that I just went straight ahead with, and it wasn't hard. Like, it was a switch. It definitely was a switch.
Yeah, amazing. It's that's something that I'm really envious of because I've gone to the gym in the past and I've had gym memberships, and I think for the first several weeks of going, it's a case of there's a bit of motivation there and there's the vision of being healthy and mentally and physically and all the benefits that come from it. But you still have to push yourself a little bit. And then after a while, it's like, oh, well, I can't go today because of this. And then before you know it, there's three or four visits in a row that you haven't been able to make it. It's like, oh, well, I'll get back to it soon. And then eventually you're canceling your gym membership out as a result of it. But there's a lot of people that go through those challenges and it's very difficult to stay disciplined. So it's quite cool to know that it was something for you that was just like, it was a click there and it made sense and you just stuck to it. And it was something that obviously was motivating in itself. So that's, I mean, I'm completely envious of you that that's worked so easily for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't go without its challenges because when you go to the gym, like you say, you might miss a couple of days. And then you've got to battle with those thoughts of like, you know, oh, you're lazy, you know, oh, you should just go do it, you know, like, but what I've realized now is that when you're more aware of like what those thoughts are telling you, you sort of have to be, you have to listen to those as well, because you'll get the weekend warrior who goes to the gym every day and just goes hard, you know what I mean? And that's like, there's only so much willpower that you can burn through before you're not going to the gym anymore. I always tell my clients that, you know, like, if you're feeling good, you know, make sure you get your rest days in. Make sure that you're on a long-term journey and not a short-term fix. And people, they really, they have to be in tune with those thoughts, because you can beat yourself up, man, just for missing one session. But it's not going to do anything good for you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just touching on, you know, the motivation side of things, like you said, I think people probably don't realize and probably put a lot of pressure on themselves with motivation, thinking that they've got to constantly be motivated all the time and in that right frame of mind. But you really, I can't remember who it was, but I remember listening to something where someone was talking about your levels of motivation, and that most people will have only so much fuel in the day to be motivated in a particular mindset. And then after that, you just can't maintain it. So I think people need to be aware of that and understand, like, for instance, you know, in a very basic way of explaining it, the first half of a day in the morning for some people, that's when your mind's more switched on and you can be more active and productive and motivated, but you can't maintain that for the entire day. So people do a lot of creative things and a lot of things that involve a lot of mental power in the mornings, and in the afternoon switch to something that's a little bit less mentally intensive. So it's
absolutely,
yeah. So I think a lot of people don't realize that, and then they kick themselves when, you know, when it comes to, you know, say after work, and they can't find the motivation to pop into the gym on the way home from slaving away all day.
But also I'd like to point out that like you say about that motivation, a lot of people have a lot of pressure on themselves as well to look a certain way, to be a certain way. And I find that pressure can crush people in the first couple of weeks of going to a gym, right? Because all it takes is that envy to take over, you know, of like, oh, she's got a better butt than me or whatever, you know? Like, that guy's got bigger biceps than me, you know? And people get really caught up on that. And it crushes them.
Do you find that a lot of people that come to you that you see are going, what's the ratio of people going for the purpose of the aesthetics of looking good versus the internal mental and physical well-being?
Well, essentially, it probably 0% aesthetic, man. Like, most of the people I attract are people that are looking for a life change and are looking to just move better and have no pain. So essentially, and the aesthetics come with that. So it's not an emphasis in what I offer people. I always make sure people can move correctly and they can do things correctly, so they're not injuring themselves, so they can sustain this for a long term.
Well, you probably find that the people that probably focus more on the aesthetics of how they look are the people that probably wouldn't invest in a personal trainer and just go to the gym, just walk in and just start picking up stuff, or just throwing themselves on a treadmill and probably not lasting the distance, not having the longevity of sticking to it, because they're there for the wrong reasons. And as you said, they probably haven't got the right movement. They're not utilizing the facilities the way that they should for their benefit. So I guess when it comes to personal training, people are making that investment and probably a lot more serious with their approach, wanting to, you know, obviously improve themselves physically, you know, not so much from the outside, but the inside out.
Absolutely.
And then obviously the benefit or the side effect of that is that, you know, the aesthetics eventually kick in over time. But I guess you'd probably find that initially with a lot of people, as you said, when they're starting a program and just kicking into it, that there's probably a bit of frustration that they might not be seeing a great deal of results initially. Or they do see, I think, well, this is my uneducated comments coming through, but I think for a lot of people, they probably see an initial impact from what they're doing. So they might see a little bit of weight loss or some initial stuff that they can see in the mirror. But then I think after that probably plateaus out for quite a while before they see those results.
Yeah. And it's hard for people to hold on to that because they have this such high expectations on themselves, and that's rough. That's stressful in itself, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, how can you sustain that amount of stress for that amount of time? So the idea is to really make sure that it's not stressful for someone and it's fun. Stop sort of trying to measure up to other people.
Yeah.
And it's really the, just do your own journey.
Yeah.
Get what you can out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there something like with, when you deal with your clients, for the people that are probably trying to find an, or get an understanding of where the improvements are coming from to try and measure it? Because a lot of people, I think, that aren't terribly versed with fitness would probably just assume that they need to look in the mirror to be able to see that things are working, when that's not always the case. So I assume that you probably have some other things that you can use to demonstrate that there are results happening, even though you might not see them straight away.
Well, essentially, you can do measurements and so forth. I'm not really a huge fan of weight, although it is a good baseline indicator of how someone's doing. But BMI is a bit of a joke. But essentially, measurements are much better. But I also question people, you know, like, so how you been lately? Like, how you been feeling lately? You know, like, have your days been effortless? Have you had great weeks? Have you been feeling happy? You know, like, and the majority of these people, like, are much, you know, they can handle the stresses in their life much easier. And that, to me, is a huge part of it. Like, it's not always about that mirror. Because that mirror will change over time.
Yeah.
But your mind is always changing. So, yeah, it's definitely to strengthen the mind as well.
It's definitely all linked together, and I think a lot of people forget that or just don't realise it. And I think now it's probably a lot – there's a lot more awareness around the link between body and mind than it has in the past. There's definitely – I think for me now, when I eventually find the motivation to kick back into physical fitness again, the benefits are more so the mind than not just the body. I think in the past I've gone in with the intention of just physically feeling better, but not thinking that it's got a link to the mind. And I think now the things that I want to do in life and thinking about being motivated and productive and getting things done, a lot of that's got to come from how I feel physically. So in order to be in the right mindset, I've got to make sure that my body is in the right position as well.
Yeah, and we all struggle with that sort of balance. Like, I'm human as well, and I definitely go through stages where, you know, if I'm not doing enough physical activity or enough exertion, if I miss a couple of BJJ classes or something like that, I just notice this feeling, you know, I'm like, oh, bit sludgy, you know?
Yeah.
So when I hit that, you know, when I hit a high octane workout or something like that, I'm back, you know, I'm charged back up, I'm ready to rock, you know? And people can definitely benefit from just, you know, slotting that in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the discipline thing is such a hard thing for people. I think for most people anyway, I mean, there's people that are like yourself that are quite lucky that I think right time, right place, and it's just everything's mentally sort of falling into place initially to get you going. But for a lot of people, it's that initial discipline, but then the long-term discipline as well, which is a difficult thing. But on that topic, and I think I'm not sure whether you'll be able. You might not be the best example because you've got that motivation. But being in Christchurch, and even when you're in Canada as well, and we'll talk about that shortly as well. You're in extremely cold climates, and I think, at least from my experiences, in the summer months, everyone's a lot more proactive to exercise and get out there and be physically fit. But when it comes to the winter months, I think that's when people slip and people start eating a lot more. They're rugging up, they're sitting at home, they're not doing a great deal of physical exercise. But given where you are in Christchurch, I mean, I think even your summers aren't, I mean, you might have a few really hot days, but I think that probably the ratio over the year is that it's more or less reasonably cold. What sort of motivation, apart from, you know, obviously going to a gym and working indoors, what sort of motivation is there to keep it going over those winter months, especially now it'd be pretty cold over your side now?
Yeah, so for me personally, I'm very lucky to be sort of in the journey of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at the moment, because you get to wear a gi and it's super, super warm.
Yeah.
You know, the whole dojo is roasting, so it's like a sauna.
Mm.
And that to me is a lot more inviting in winter.
Mm.
So that for me is a huge motivation to still train in the winter.
Yeah.
And essentially, you know, like, I don't think it's too much of an issue because, you know, I have my motivation days that are low. But, you know, going to a class or something like that for most of the general public is a lot more inviting because you're getting warm.
Mm.
You know what I mean? By moving.
Yeah.
But it's just that initial, the morning people, like I struggle with this myself, is, you know, the early morning workouts.
Mm.
Huh, that's tough. That's real tough. It has to be an afternoon type thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
But then when you look at that, bro, when you really look at the winter thing, you know how you say hibernation, sort of, you know, like warmth and comfort and all that thing. Perhaps it is a sort of time to back off a little bit and rest and focus on other things, you know?
Well, it might be something where probably in that period of time where people are slowing down a little bit, it's probably more of a focus on, well, it should always be a focus on diet, but I think probably even more of a focus of diet in that period of time when you're less active.
Yeah, exactly. And it's super hard. Like, it's not all easy. And it's about finding what's right for you because some people eat certain foods in winter and they just gain heaps of weight. And some others don't. So it's always a little play with food, really.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's got their own individual path and everyone reacts differently to their set of circumstances and whatever they're putting in their stomachs as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
And also the emotional makeup of that person, you know, like someone might be so stressed out, you know, have so many things on their plate and not even realize it. And then realizing that that's sucking their power, their willpower to actually hit the gym. So there's a lot of factors to it, eh? It's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more complex is probably not the best word to put to describe it, but it is a lot more complex than probably people think. But it's not complex in the sense that it's difficult. It's just that there's a lot more to it than just, you know, getting up and moving your body and that's it. There's a lot of factors that you have to keep in mind. And I think especially in the 90s, I've noticed that, I'm not sure if it was like that over your way as well, but there was a massive focus on just diets. And I think that industry really sort of milked it. And a lot of people, you know, I've had family members that would just take the next crazy diet that came along and just expect that their world would change, but they would suffer with this diet. They would just they'd sacrifice so much. And then but the big question was always, okay, well, when your diet's over for your 6 weeks or whatever it is, what do you do after that? You know, you can't maintain that crazy diet that you're on. So what do you do after that?
No.
And they just go back to what they were eating beforehand. So it was and I think now, at least from the outside, it appears that the diets are still there and people are still using those options, but I think people have got a bit more a little bit more educated now, and I think probably with the internet and whatnot, people are seeing what other people are up to and can see that there's more options out there, and you have to be a little bit smarter about your approach, and it doesn't have to be difficult. There's a lot of factors to it, but it doesn't have to be difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many factors to those diets, and I'm not a big fan of them. Like, I think they're all like the next big thing. They're just out there to sell and make money. And in a capitalist society, that's, you know, you're going to make money off everything, right?
Mm.
So when it comes down to diet, essentially a well-balanced all-round diet is always the best way to go because it's way more sustainable.
Yeah.
And sustainability is what it's all about, and integration.
Mm.
Because when people come off diets, they've got ruined metabolisms.
Yeah.
And they'll just gain it all back and worse. And then you're ruining that person's, like, mentality for even trying again, which is disgusting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Not a big fan.
No, absolutely. And it does a lot of damage mentally for people as well, because I've seen it where people continuously try different diets and they just get shattered every time that the results come back and they find themselves blowing back up to what they were beforehand. They just say nothing ever works. And it's just the completely wrong approach. Just on the topic of that really quickly, what's I don't know a lot about it, but what's your thoughts on all these detox treatments that are out there? So people that do like just an all juice detox for, you know, a week or a few weeks or whatever it might be. Is there benefit to those things, or do you think that it's sort of another masked diet that's out there that really, I mean, you have to just maintain a well balanced diet, as you said before?
I think it's a little bit of a moneymaker as well, but I think there is benefit to detoxing as such. But but via fasting. So fasting is probably the best way to detox the body. But not so much like the special juice, you know. Like, I mean, juices are fantastic, and I love drinking juice, man. But you're essentially taking a lot of fiber out as well, which is you need that fiber, man. That's important. And but yeah, don't get me wrong, I really enjoy the juices and that, but I'd never do a juice diet, you know, like all the way through. Like I just don't. It's not around. It's not balanced.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I think it is another money ploy in a way. It can obviously you can get a lot more phytonutrients and so forth in a quick way, which is positive, you know. But as for detox diets, you know, ones that are like 2 to 3 weeks long, and you know, you only have this much amount of fluid, and it's freaky, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way that I see it is, I mean, they market it as a detox, making, in other words, they're really sort of emphasizing that it's a short-term thing that you're doing, and it's meant to sort of, I guess, well, from my perspective, it seems to be like a bit of a reset in a way. But I worry that, I mean, not that I've had any interest in it myself, but I've always worried that what state your body is in after you've gone through that process, and, you know, where you're at, and, you know, you might feel a little bit lighter and a little bit cleansed in certain aspects. But I mean, what's that, as you said before, what's that do to your metabolism when you start eating, going back to your existing diet again? So it's
absolutely it's always interesting how that works though, like, because metabolism is like such an important thing. And if you stop eating solids as such, your metabolism will change big time.
I think even with metabolism, well, actually going back to what you said before about fasting, what would that do to your metabolism? I mean, it depends on how long you fast for, I assume.
Well, look at Ramadan.
Yeah.
So they fast for quite a long time, and they sip broth during the day, right? And they really restrict their water and everything. And like, it can be a super beneficial thing to reset sort of the organs and make sure they're all talking to each other correctly. I think that's the main sort of thing about it as well, and also a discipline. But essentially, I mean, metabolism wise like, there's, you know, you've heard of intermittent fasting and so forth, people getting great results by using that. Metabolism doesn't seem to be super affected by it, but yeah, I mean, it's giving your body a chance to rest. Because it's always digesting. It's always doing something.
And most of the time, for most people, it's digesting stuff that it probably shouldn't be digesting either.
Exactly.
So it's working. It's working overtime to try and get all this crap through your system, and a lot of it's just not coming out at all. Which, you know, obviously that's where people start to balloon out. So I understand. Yeah. I understand a bit of the concept, and it's something that's kind of, it is interesting, because I like the idea of that bit of a reset in a sense, but. When people talk about, I mean, I've seen people I work with, and they go on these juice diets, and I just look and I go, I can't imagine how a liquid only diet, regardless of whatever it is, can give you any long term benefits at all. You know, it might give you some initial short term thrill mentally that you're doing something that you think is positive, but physically, I couldn't get my head around it. But the fasting thing, depending on how long it goes for, is it makes a little bit more sense. But I think it was something I have to look into a bit further.
Yeah, you definitely should. It's all very fascinating, and it's been used for thousands of years. So, you know, if something's been used that long, it's usually quite beneficial.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think you know, probably a lot of the opinions out there were based on our own experiences, and, you know, for most of us, we've only been on this planet for, you know, a few decades, if that. So, you know, probably need to go back and see what the previous generations have been doing, and as you said, if something's been consistent along the way and it's proven to work, then yeah, there must be something right there.
Yeah, it must be some sort of essence to it that's correct, you know.
Touching on, I mentioned before, you're in Canada for how long were you over there for?
I was over there for a year on a working holiday visa.
Yeah. And I noticed, and this is, I think, was sort of sparked us talking again after quite a while, is you worked at a flotation centre?
Yeah, I did. I worked at Float House Victoria.
And you did that for the entire 12 months that you were there?
Well, it would have been, let's see. So I arrived in September, and I had my very first flotation experience in November, the start of November. And then I started sort of asking, yeah, I could probably do some volunteering here and just, you know, doing a 4.5-hour shift for a free float every week.
Right.
And I essentially just worked in hospitality for a bit at a really cool place called Ferris Oyster Bar. It's pretty fun. But I did that, and then eventually there was a full-time position that sort of came up, and I took that.
That's cool. Yeah. The whole flotation thing is something that I still haven't done because I'm lazy, but I've got so much fascination with it. It's just,
how could you be lazy, though? Lazy, because floating's so easy.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, once I'm there, then it's perfect. I just don't have to do anything. But it's something that I'm extremely fascinated about, and I think that's sort of what sparked us chatting a bit more over the last several months. But for you, I mean, you said that you were there for a few months before you did your first float. Was it something that you were aware of that it existed before you even got over to Canada, or was it something that while you were there that somebody had introduced you to the concept and then you went and tried it out?
Well, actually, I was turned on to it by a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, Holger, and that was back in Christchurch, and he mentioned that he was, you know, doing the odd float every now and again up in New Plymouth, which is quite interesting. And he talked about it a little bit, and then I guess there was a little tiny seed planted there. And then I saw Joe Rogan stuff on flotation and the benefits and all that kind of thing. And then that sort of, that was the background as in, I need to get into this. Mm. I need to find out more about this. Yeah.
So I guess for anybody that's not aware or doesn't understand what floating or flotation is, do you want to give a quick crash course in what it is, especially now that you've officially worked in the industry?
Yeah. So essentially, you're getting into a pot of water that is super saturated salt water, magnesium sulfate, so it's just whole heap of magnesium that you can absorb, and you sort of float effortlessly on top of this water, and it's heated to skin temperature, so you sort of lose the perception of where the water starts and where your skin starts. So it's and you're just able to completely relax and anti-gravity, and you sort of cut all the senses out as such. So you've got like no smell, you've got no light, and also you lose that perception of feeling your skin as well. So you can really turn inward and sort of focus on that, on sort of processing thoughts and so forth. But yeah, essentially that's the experience. So you just float in there for, you know, 60 to 90 minutes. And you come out essentially with a reset nervous system, and you just feel super relaxed, and like tension leaves the body just so effortlessly. It's an amazing tool.
I mean, obviously, it's got benefits for anybody. But is there certain types of people that it probably has an even bigger impact for? So people that have probably got, I'm just assuming probably muscle pain or have had injuries or something like that, where there's been a lot of pressure on their body for whatever, you know, some sort of trauma. Would that process of flotation probably have some larger impacts for people like that?
Yeah, we've had one of our clients currently here in Christchurch. He's had terrible back issues, multiple back surgeries, and he's always in pain. And that's even with the painkillers. Mm. So we get people like that, and he started floating like once a week.
Mm.
And essentially, he's now 30 days plus pain free.
Wow.
So, you know, like he's on less pharmaceuticals, everything's like relaxed, and he's getting a super amazing benefit from it. Not only just the lack of pain, like he's getting like creativity possibilities. He's getting, you know, his mind just works a lot better. It's just amazing to watch. And his whole demeanor's changed.
Yeah.
So he used to be quite an uptight, cynical, very stressed person, and then essentially, yeah, it sort of just melted away.
And
it's amazing to watch.
On the physical side of it, and I mean, the mental side for me is where I'm really fascinated with it. But on the physical side of it, for that particular guy, is it probably a case that in that period of time that he is floating, that aspect of his body that's had some trauma is just having a chance to, well, essentially heal without any pressure put on it? Is that potentially a reason why he's able to go without, like, that's the results that he's getting, is because his body's suspended, he's not having any pressure on any aspect of his body, especially around that area?
Absolutely. I mean, Kevin, that whole anti-gravity thing, we're fighting gravity all the time. And when you get that chance to not fight gravity, it's pretty damn good for the body. I mean, you get that good endorphin release, you know, your body's just healing itself, essentially.
Well, there's probably nothing else that would have that same sensation. I mean, even like if you're just sitting at home, like you're lying in bed, you're still pressed against the bed. So there's still, you're still pushing the gravity there downwards. And, you know, a lot of people probably don't sleep on a very good mattress either. And then, you know, if they're in a bathtub, you're still, I mean, you might be floating depending on the size of your bathtub, but it's probably still that gravity there that's not quite completely relaxing your body. So there's probably nothing else like it.
No, there isn't. I mean, a lot of people say, this is the most common thing, and it's so funny. You get people saying like, oh, I could just do that at home. I'm like, oh, your bath would explode probably from the density of the salt.
Yeah.
To start with. Yeah. and then also you've got the fact of distractions all around you, you know, so someone might be boiling the kettle.
Mm.
You know, we absorb all these things. We absorb all these sounds, and our brain's constantly processing all the time.
Mm.
So when we actually get that chance to switch everything off, it's an amazing sort of a liberating experience because, oh my God, there's no sound. This is crazy. You know what I mean?
This is where I get really fascinated about it because I've yet to experience it, but I love the idea of being able to be in an environment that has no distraction, has nothing interfering with whatever's currently happening. And I guess, you know, I've attempted to try meditation and things like that over the last 12, 18 months. And at times it's better than other times. And, you know, you acknowledge sounds around you as they pop into your consciousness and you don't fight it and whatnot. And it's that sort of being mindful and whatnot. But in a float environment where you don't have those noises, you don't have those distractions there that are just fighting for attention all the time. I'm curious to think where your mind goes. Like what even from your first experience when you did do the float, and I think from what I've read and listened to from other people, it usually takes a few floats where you really start to get those benefits mentally and physically. But from that first experience that you had, what went through your head? What sort of experiences were you getting?
Well, I'm sort of in the same boat as you. Like, I sort of got into meditation in a big way. The whole mindfulness practice, and I've done a 10-day retreat as well for Vipassana retreat, and that also gave me the skills to sort of meditate. Forcing yourself into that situation was quite good, but like this, the float tank essentially for me, the very first time was really awkward. I was like, got in the float, and I was like, man, this is so weird. and I just started noticing how much I wanted to control my experience. Mentally.
Yep.
So I was like, right, I hope this is okay. This is going to be okay. But my first float, I got in and fully managed to relax the whole body.
Mm.
So then my body was no longer a distraction for these thoughts that were flowing. But I had like a whole range of thoughts happening, you know, like it could have been just silly little minute stuff that's been happening during the week. It started on a superficial level. Of like, oh yeah, that I should have handled that situation better.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You can start analyzing and start looking at, you know, parts of how you communicate with other people. And then also it got on a deeper level, a level of like some of the blockages that I have in my life. And this is in my first float, mainly because of my meditation background.
Yeah.
So I was able to sort of get into that pretty quickly. But essentially, I actually started getting really nauseous. Because the middle ear gets super confused with the whole anti-gravity element.
Mm.
And this doesn't happen to a lot of people, but it does happen to, the, you know, say one in one in 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not very common, but for me, taking gravity away made my middle ear super confused whether I was standing up, lying down, and then I started feeling like I was doing backflips in the tank. So I started getting nauseous from that, and that was like the sense of vertigo. But essentially, and I also suffered from claustrophobia before I got into this float. So having the idea of being in water in an enclosed space with no light was quite panicking for me to start with. But I knew it would be a good challenge because I love a good challenge. So getting in and doing that, I felt that after about, 10, 20 minutes, I just started getting that feeling of like, I should open that damn lid. Because, it was just in the mind, it was just sitting there going, open that damn lid, and started, breathing into my chest more, getting a bit anxious about it. And then I remembered the technique of meditation is don't be reactive, don't attach yourself to that thought and follow it down the rabbit hole. So essentially I just let myself relax more. I breathed deep into my belly and then the thought passed. And then I didn't have that feeling ever again since I floated. So that first float was pretty intense. It was almost like a rite of passage for me. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, a whole range of twists and turns throughout that whole period of time. And were you in there for an hour or an hour and a half for that first one?
It was an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But you lose that psychological time.
Yeah, that's
like, you don't even know it's that long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it goes goes a hell of a lot quicker than it feels like it goes quicker?
Yeah, I mean, like the majority of clients that get out of the tank, they feel like it was 5 minutes long. You know what I mean? And they've been in there for a good amount of time.
Mm.
And it's amazing to watch people go into that theta state where they're just chilling. It's really great to see because especially here in Christchurch, we've got so many stressed people and there's so many traumas that the earthquake brought up.
Mm.
That, people now have the opportunity to relax and then possibly go see a counselor afterwards, and really integrate those problems.
That's interesting because I think PTSD would be, well, you just said it right there from everything that's happened sort of in the recent years in Christchurch with the earthquakes. I mean, there'd be a hell of a lot of PTSD in the local community there. So a resource like this would be so beneficial for people to be able to deconstruct their thoughts and their anxiety and be able to get to a point at least to then, as you said, seek some further help or some further counseling. Because I think a lot of people would probably just continue to bottle it up and just struggle to control it.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm also the kind of person that's very open to, I've had counseling myself and, because we lost a friend in the quake. So it was, and that was something that I was bottling up for a bit. And then when you start noticing, when you have fantastic tools like this, you can actually float and then you're in a much better state to talk about these things and decompress yourself. So, and integrate all those feelings and issues that you may have that are causing massive blocks in your life. So, it's a fantastic tool for it. They both work well together.
It's funny because the concept when people who don't understand it and they hear it for the first time, it sounds so one-dimensional. And I think for a lot of people, probably sounds a bit too woo-woo or a bit too bullshit, to be honest. And I think people who don't understand it. But when you break it down, I mean, and we're only scraping the surface of it, just talking about it now, but there's just so many things that it could provide for people, just personally for individuals, but then I guess has a role and effect to the wider community of how everyone interacts with each other and their approaches and, as I said before, creativity and motivation and just, I guess, that positive thinking or just not so much positive thinking, but I guess just having the awareness and the acceptance of life's everyday challenges.
Awareness is a massive thing, and that's something that I've learned a lot about, and becoming aware of those thoughts before you play them out, because our society and social media is a fantastic example for this.
Mm.
is it's like a little test, you know. You can see people trying to rock each other up. And essentially, you've got a population of people that are super reactive. So they're acting impulsively on their thoughts. But when you do something like this, it enables you to sit back and observe and be a lot more selective in what battles that you put yourself forward in. And I think if we had a society of people that were more, you know, less reactive and a lot more rational about what they're saying and not reacting on pure emotion, we'd have a much better existence.
Oh, absolutely. In Christchurch itself, how many float places are there? Is there just the one, or is there a couple there that are in Christchurch?
There's one called Deep Space, and that's out in Woburn. Mm-hmm. So that's just a one tank set up. Mm-hmm. And there's another one open up in Rangiora, and that's going to be a one tank set up too. But they're sort of like further out of town.
Okay.
And essentially in town, we're the only ones at Cloud9 Float Club down Mandeville Street, which is actually the only one in town. So we're very busy. It's very good.
Yeah, very cool. That's one thing that I've noticed, that the ones that are around, especially here in Sydney, and there's more and more popping up now and creeping down the south coast, is that most of the places are one tank set up. There's one place that's sort of more towards the city where there's a couple of tanks, but you look at their bookings and they're booked out way in advance. So you can definitely see that I think the demand is exceeding, you know, the supply at the moment. So there's definitely opportunity out there for people who want to start a business, because I tell you what, it's probably a very smart move to jump into that industry. But I think that was probably one of the deterrents for me initially. It was like, okay, well, let's do this. And I looked and then it's like, oh, geez, it's going to take me weeks to get a slot in. But it's just interesting to see how prevalent it is, you know, where we are in that part of the world.
Yeah, the only issue I have with that is, you know, a whole bunch of people starting our float centres who haven't really floated much.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And yeah.
Yeah, and they don't get they don't quite understand the depths of this technology that they have, and, you know, the ability to hold space for people that are going into an environment like that is super important. People can come out of the tank crying, like happy tears.
Mm.
They could be happy that they've finally, you know, made peace with a situation in their mind, you know, like whether it's a past loved one or, you know, everyone's had their things happen in their life.
Yeah.
So having a person there that can hold space and really allow them and support them, you know, just before they jump out into the world again.
Absolutely. And there's a place that's just south of Sydney in Wollongong. I think it's they've only just moved, but I haven't been there, but a friend's been there. And from my understanding, their setup is in an environment where you sit down and you relax before you even go into the float tank. And so you sort of start to get into a relaxed state by chilling out, having a conversation with the people that work there and just getting relaxed so you're not going in their tent straight away. But then also, which ties in with what you just said, once it's over and they come out, then they encourage you to sit back down in their little foyer, which is where they've got this nice setup and it's a nice environment. And then they just, you're there to have conversation and have a chat. So it's, you know, it could be a long process and quite a bit of time invested, but to be able to cap off that experience by having that sort of relaxed ending to that experience would probably be so beneficial, just for instances, just like you said before, where people aren't going from one extreme to the other, and it's probably shocking the system and they're not having that opportunity to really express what they've just experienced.
Yeah, the integrations are so important, because one of the things is that, you know, if people get out into like rush hour traffic and like, you know, start feeling the tension again, you know, like they can, essentially you've got to try and make sure that they're grounded and back again, because you can feel a bit floaty for a bit, you know. I mean, it's not unsafe to drive. I mean, you're not going to have any road rage. you're always pretty chill. I mean, I really recommend people that have road rage to float.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that we strive for as well. And I'm really, really happy to hear that in Sydney that they're doing a very similar thing.
Yeah.
Instead of just banging them out, you know, instead of just floating someone, oh, okay, say bye. You know, like there's got to be a conversation. There's got to be a human interaction there.
Yeah, and there's probably a number of them that are out there that are probably a bit more churn and burn and meeting the demand to, you know, to obviously make a few quick bucks. But I guess the longevity of those businesses versus other ones that are taking a more genuine approach to it would probably be significantly different. So it's exciting because I think more people are talking about alternative ways of healing and developing themselves, and it's not, you know, through sort of some crazy woo-woo type stuff that in the past has probably been associated with you know, some con tactics or it's something that involves a lot of money invested and whatnot. So I think the more that people talk, the more that people will probably be exposed to these sort of these outlets.
Yeah, I reckon. And the thing with the float tank is you can't really call it that woohoo because it was developed in the 50s.
Mm.
You know, like it's been used for many, many years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for people, you know, it's had its, the industry's had its ups and downs with, like any industry does.
Mm.
It had in this, you know, resurgence in the 80s and then it sort of died off. And then it's come back with vengeance. And I really can only see the positive from that as long as people have a really kind intention towards the people using it.
Absolutely. And I think it's probably more important now than ever that people have an outlet or a resource like this that they can utilize with, as you said before, with social media. And I think just the mentality that we sort of pushed on each other where we expect everything very quickly. If we're not happy with something, then we discard it straight away. We're, as you said before, very reactive 9 times out of 10. So we sort of float through the day and then wonder, float through the day for lack of a better word, but get to the end of the day where you sort of forget what you've actually done and you've just been running on that autopilot for the entire day. And then you wonder why you've got a ripping headache. You wonder why you're not sleeping properly. You wonder why you just feel lousy or you're agitated in a bad mood. It's a very reactive culture that we live in. So it's probably more, it's
a lot of pressure.
Beneficial.
So much pressure.
Yeah.
You know, like this pressure to be something that you're not already, you know, this pressure, this inherent anxiety to try and, you know, to try and be accepted, to try and but really floating to me has really made me realize, oh, I'm actually a pretty good dude, you know.
Yeah.
And all the things that I'm heading towards are actually all positive, you know.
Yeah,
all good directions.
Yeah. It's definitely a lot of pressure, especially when you've got so many outlets of public displays of what you're up to, you know, via your phone, so all the different social media platforms. And there's definitely, I can still see it increasing where people are making a big push to try and show everyone how good they are or what they're up to and trying to portray a certain image to other people of what they are that might not even be reality anyway. But it's sort of trying to measure up to other people, and you see everyone else on social media doing things, and you only see a snapshot of their life. You don't see their everyday comings and goings. But I think seeing the way that everyone interacts with each other, there's just that underlying pressure that you said before, where I think everyone's just trying to measure up against each other.
I've been there myself. Mm. You know, like I remember when I was a raging guitar player, and I still am. I still love playing guitar, man. But I got caught up in this whole illusion of like, oh, I want to be better than that guy. Yeah. Oh, I've got to be faster than him. You know, I've got to be way faster than that guy. Come on. You know, I put myself under this amazing stress.
Yeah.
And for what?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And so now, like, when I pick up the instrument, I feel like I'm doing it for a more honest reason now.
Mm.
You know, like I'm not trying to hold up, you know, this stupid illusion of trying to be the best, you know?
Absolutely.
But, yeah, and then that comes into other things as well, of like trying other instruments, you know, you start playing with different things, and which is super important for your creative output. Mm. Instead of pigeonholing yourself, putting yourself in a box that just, you know, which we all do. We all put ourselves in a box, and then we're inherently stressed out about being in the box. So,
it's a vicious cycle.
I've just been trying to dissolve it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you still I mean, you said that you still pick up the guitar, but are you still doing music? Are you still playing in the band? Are you still, is the band still going, Dissolution?
Well, the band as such is, like, it's still, we still have an album that's recorded and that's ready to sort of, to release, but we sort of lost our drummer, which is my brother.
Okay.
Which we all seem to have drummer issues, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah. And, you know, life, you know, takes us different directions and essentially that's what happened. So it's more of a hiatus at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm still in good contact with Courtney and Brett. Mm. So we still hang out and we're still good friends and we'll still make music together. And but essentially I'm not in a band at the moment, but I'm just jamming with lots of different people, different instruments, different, you know, like just really having fun with it.
And that's kind of cool because I'm no doubt, just touching on what you said before, there's probably not that pressure that you have to desperately try and find someone to get the band moving again. And you know, you said you've got an album recorded. I think I'm assuming, and I'm probably just speaking on behalf of you, but I assume that there's peace in the fact that you can come back to it at any stage, and when the time's right and when the pieces exactly fall into place, then you can take that next step. But there's no pressure to try and rush something and try and get something out, and you know, and the worry that everything's falling apart. It's just that, you know, the time's not right, and when those opportunities pop up, then you can obviously seize them and go from there.
Yeah, no, I definitely felt like the old mentality I used to have was like, oh, I'm going to get this done. Let's get it done. Let's get a drummer. And then now I'm like, it'll happen in good time. You know, like we'll definitely find someone that suits the mentality of the band and the personalities mesh. And we've got that beautiful and amazing album that's ready to go.
Yeah,
which I'm really stoked about. And it's been mixed by a guy called Seamus.
Oh, right.
And he used to live in Christchurch.
Yep.
And he played in a band called Zerst Aaron.
Okay.
And fantastic musician and really great at mixing as well. So essentially, it's all been done. It's ready to rock. And it's just about finding that right person, the right moment in each other's life. And then we'll be back to it, you know?
That's cool. I love the idea that you've got that music there. It's ready to go. You've put all the blood, sweat, and tears into that, and you've gone through that process already, and you're sitting on it. So it's almost like you're sitting on the gold mine, so to speak. You've got your asset there, and it's ready to go, and you can just unleash it whenever it feels right for you guys. So that's really cool, because I think for other people it might. If you need that person in the band to then start going through and putting the ideas down and recording them, then it might be a slightly different scenario. But yeah, that's awesome to know that that it's just sitting there waiting to go.
Yeah, and I'm super proud of it. We all are. We're so proud of it. It's definitely a huge step forward from the first album. Still has that thrashy element and the melody and so forth, but there's some stuff in there that, you know, I find to be quite groundbreaking for us.
That's
very cool.
And has with the band itself and writing and whatnot, what elements are you bringing to that writing process? Have you gone from a musical point of view, or do you also add lyrics, or is that some of the other guys that contribute towards that side of it?
So with the music side of it, I'm pretty big into writing a lot of riffs and arrangements.
Yeah.
And this album, the first album was mainly me and Brett.
Yep.
So Brett would do all the vocal, all the lyrical melodies and all lyrics and so forth. And I would throw in riffs. He'd have a couple of guitarists in there as well. Mm-hmm. And essentially I wrote most of that in the first album. But on the second album, me and Courtney, the second guitar player, we just absolutely gel when we create. And we were creating whole songs and just throwing them at each other. And it was just fantastic how our styles just melded together beautifully. And that's why I'm probably so proud of that album, is that there's been a collaboration of the three of us to really nail it down. Yeah.
Do you think that writing, because I'm not sure how long ago you wrote the album, but has the change in your lifestyle and I guess the different perspectives that you've been able to obtain in the last, say, 3 years, has that had an impact of how you've approached the band with writing and dealing with the other guys?
Well, I feel that I actually are way more open to ideas.
Yeah.
So I used to be super rigid about what I thought, and that's a good thing in certain ways. Of like having a certain foresight and like, nah, this is the way it should be. But now I feel like I'm way more open to taking on someone's creative output that's brilliant. It's like actually realizing other people's creative talent has been a huge shift in my mentality. So noticing that just Courtney's super talented guy and so underrated, like as a musician. And he has an amazing ear for things. And we just sort of, when writing, you know how it all just perfectly gels.
Yeah.
And I don't think I, with my mentality, like 3 years, like, because it has been the last 3 years that things have shifted a lot for me. And with the guys now, I can just be myself. I can just throw it all out there. And then they're like, oh, that was pretty, that was fucking cool. I like that. That was good. But beforehand, yeah, it was, I definitely had the blinkers on and couldn't see the creative elements of so other people's input.
So now you
I reckon the last, I just really accept how great other people can be as well.
That's it. Just just making the most of other people's talents.
Yeah, and just it's like on a canvas, right? You just add in a few more colors and a few more brush strokes, and it's definitely beneficial for everything in life, collaborating with someone else.
That's awesome. You're talking up the album without even telling me what it's going to sound like or anything like that. I just like the approach mentally that you guys have taken towards it. So when it eventually sees light of day, I'll be stoked to check it out. So we'll have to.
Yeah, man, you'll be the first one to get a copy, mate.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
One last thing, because I'm just keeping an eye on time, and I know you're quite busy, but. One last thing that I've noticed, and I've been spending a bit of time reading, is you've got a blog, Mental Phase. So I was having a look at that, and you've also got a Facebook page for it as well. So I'll give a link to everyone that they can check out. But what was the purpose behind the blog? What was there some inspiration initially to write out your thoughts and experiences? Where did that come from? And I guess where is there any plans to push in a particular direction, or is it something that you're just going to touch on whenever you have a chance?
Yeah, well, where it sort of gave birth was when I was in Victoria, and I sort of noticed this sort of deep depression sort of come in. I was like, what is this? This is weird. And I actually eventually found out it's vitamin D deficiency.
Right.
And also a lot to do with sort of being away from home. So shredding that illusion of myself. And I felt that writing about these things and my experiences was medicine as a whole. And for me, that whole blog is just being real and authentic. You know, there's no filters on that. It is just being real as possible. And you can take it and leave it as you like. But that's how I see the world as a lens now. And I think we need more people to actually just jump out of that social confine of worrying about what everyone else thinks of you and just be real.
Yeah.
Just be real, you know? So that's my big thing for that.
That's cool, because I was reading through it, and there's a lot of things that you were writing there. It's like, oh, absolutely, like 100% agree, or I've been there, done that, and totally connected with a lot of things that you've written in there. And I love the idea of people documenting, whether it be for public consumption or whether it's just for themselves and no one else will ever read it. And it's just, I think the process of getting something out, whether you're physically writing something or you're typing something, but just writing out those thoughts just appears to be so therapeutic, just to get them out of your mind, especially when, you know, going back to what we were saying before with us dealing with so many different thoughts that are coming in and out of our minds and the distractions that we have all the time. It's hard to even focus on one particular thing that might be pressing on your mind for a long period of time. So writing it out, you're almost getting that that awareness in the moment, that mindfulness of really sort of dissecting the things that are going through your mind.
Yeah, and I saw it as like, I used a pen. So I used to write with the pen, and I found a deeper connection with the flow state of just writing. Mm. And essentially floating helped me with that and releasing a lot more creativity and so forth when it comes to what I'm writing about, is like just being honest as possible. And the thing is that those techniques, they all relate to each other, you know, and having that as medicine, man, like everyone can write stuff down. But it's just about being honest enough about it that you don't care about what other people think.
Yeah.
Because the people that, you know, it's that whole saying of your vibe, you know, attracts your tribe. And if you're going to bring out an honest vibe, you're probably going to get a lot more honest people in your life.
I like it. Absolutely. And I'm going to put a link for people to check that out, because I think whether you want to write something that's out there in the public domain for people to read, or whether it's something just for yourself in a notepad or in a journal or whatever it might be, hopefully what you've done will motivate a few people to pick up a pen and just start writing. And writing without, and I'm sure you can agree with it, is, you know, writing without a real sense of purpose initially anyway, just writing just anything that's in your mind, just getting it out there. And then obviously if you want to write a particular, you know, a particular topic or a thought that you've had, then so be it. But not putting those restrictions or those rules on, just writing, just translating whatever's in your mind out into paper in front of you.
Yeah, we're always trying to control everything about our experience.
Hmm.
And I'm much more an advocate for the flow state, you know, like just letting things come and actually come through you, because it's way more honest, way more genuine, and it usually sounds heaps better too when you create with music, you know.
Yeah.
melodies soar, you know, counterpoints work better. Everything's great. Yeah,
that's awesome. Really cool. All right, cool. Well, I'll put links for everyone to check out, and I might put some details so that people can reach out to you as well. But we'll wrap it up now. But thanks so much. I really appreciate it, man. And we'll have to do a round two, or maybe I'll get over to Christchurch sometime soon, and we'll do one with a float involved.
Yeah, mate, and I'll definitely do a little Sydney trip, and maybe we can go catch a boat.
Sounds good. Man. All right, take care, man. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that one. That was really cool. All the links will be on andysocial.net. There will be a YouTube link to this conversation. So if there was anything of interest that you thought could be good for somebody you know, please use the YouTube link. That's all on andysocial.net, or off the top of my head, it's youtube.com/c/AndyDowling. I'm losing my voice. Pardon me. I would encourage you guys to use the YouTube links if you want to pass anything on, even if it's a particular part of the conversation, not the entire thing. YouTube's so much better to pass on these conversations to people, especially people who aren't aware of podcasts or don't have the attention span to listen to the entire thing. I'm losing my voice again. I need a drink. That'll all be online by the time you listen to this. Another massive thing that would be great is rating and reviewing on iTunes, or just getting onto Facebook and liking and sharing the pages and the posts. That it definitely helps bring more awareness to the podcast and keeps this whole thing going. As always, and I haven't mentioned this for a while, if anybody wants any discounts, AndySocial is the code word. And you can buy merchandise from our Lord store. So at the moment, there's Lord and Dungeon merchandise on there, CDs, T-shirts, et cetera, et cetera. There's some other music on there from friends in India. There's also music from Arnie, who was previously on that podcast, is sadly passed on, but his memory is certainly there in the music that he's created. So that's all available on our online store, which is lord.net.au/store. And we're slowly migrating all of that over to Bandcamp in the near future as well. But for the time being, that's the easiest way to pick up stuff. And in the near future, there will be podcast-related merchandise as well, once I find a spare bit of dough to invest. But lots of cool stuff. And the code word andysocial.net will give you 10% off anything in the store, and you can use it as many times as you want. So if you're smart, you'll write it down somewhere, and as new things become available, you can just constantly get a discount. So anyway, that's about it. Thank you so much. I don't even know what number episode this is. Potentially it's episode 50. So if it is, woohoo. Congratulations to myself, but massive thank you to everyone that's tuned in so far and supported it. The views or the listens continue to increase episode by episode. So I can definitely see that it's tracking in the right direction. And over time, the guests will become more and more varied. There's more and more people that I want to approach. Some people that normally or previously I probably would have thought were out of my league. But there's a lot of exciting things coming, and hopefully off the back of the podcast, a lot of other cool projects that will come out of it as well. But thanks so much as always. Enough rambling. We'll speak soon. Ta-ta. You're ready. You're ready, social.